So a fairly gentlemanly robbery, in a sense. Well, obviously, it didn't terrify the bloke.
No, obviously, his first job was rather meek and mild by the sound
of it. I'll give you $300, but I won't take you out the bank and get more. I'm reliably informed you spent 24 minutes in the bank, which means you could have spoken War and Peace in that time.
To be honest, the TAB wasn't financial enough
to do a speedboat.
To do a speedboat yes. episode.
Right.
So it was a canoe.
I'm Andrew Rule. This is Life and Crimes. Today we have a guest who visited us some years ago. It's Doug Morgan, one half of the After Dark Bandit Twins. Those listeners who can't recall this may have heard of the After Dark Bandit or Bandits. For a long time, people thought that the Bandit knocking over banks and TABs back in 78 and 79 was one person. It turns out, dear listener, there were two, and they were twins. Today, we have Douglas K. Morgan, but we don't have his brother, Peter K. Morgan. Hello, Doug.
How are you, mate?
Now, you're here to talk to us about various things, but before we get to the new stuff, we're going to just remind our listeners what you and your brother got up to and why. It all starts, I think, probably in New Zealand when you were kids, when your dad, the late K. Morgan, which is, you know, your middle name, got up to a bit of strife and you kids learned a few bad habits. Is that a fair summary?
No, I'm gonna ruin that straight away and go back to when I was five.
Go do that.
What happened when I was five? My dad was one of the biggest builders in Melbourne.
Yep.
And we come home at about midnight after we've been out, because the old man used to take us out all over the place because he had so much money.
Yeah.
And there was rumour the company was about to go bad.
Yes.
Federal coppers were searching the house when we got home.
Were they?
So
what were they after?
They were after the company books.
I see.
To see where the money might be going.
I see.
And so at 5 years old, I heard about the bad man that had been breaking into our house. So that was probably the first thing I ever thought about bad men being on the other side.
The federal police.
Federal police.
And had your dad, do you think, with the wisdom of hindsight, been tickling the books and salting away a bit of money? What had he got up to?
No, but the company was about to go because of the credit squeeze.
Credit squeeze. So to some extent, your father, who was a very skilled builder, great carpenter, good at what he did, charming bloke, good talker, had there not been a credit squeeze in the early 60s, he may well have remained a big builder and have ended up an enormous builder.
And I wouldn't be talking to you.
That, you wouldn't be. You would have been, you know, A.V. Jennings. But in the real world, there was a credit squeeze and he, like many others, felt the pinch. He went under. And what happened next?
Well, then he sort of moved on when the creditors were looking for him.
Yep.
Young people wouldn't realise back. If you go back even maybe 40 years ago,
yep.
People could restart under a different name without identification. They could open bank accounts. Yep. They get driver's licenses. So back in the 60s and even right through to probably in the 80s,
you
could just go and start again.
No picture ID.
Well, he only moved down to Mornington and started again.
From where to where?
From Seaford to Mornington.
Seaford to Mornington.
That's a big run, isn't it?
Yeah, about half an hour.
And then things didn't go well again, and he went to New Zealand on the run.
You actually went to school at Mornington in those days.
Went to school at Mornington,
and
yes.
You and your brother, Peter, were in the form above or below one Chopper Reed. Known as Mark Reed.
He was definitely known as Mark then.
Yep.
And he was in grade 3 and we were in grade 5. And I didn't know a lot about him, but last year or the year before, I caught up with a mate that was in grade 4.
Yeah.
And he was the link man. He knew all of us.
Oh, I see.
So he confirmed it was definitely Chopper. Well, as you said, Mark.
Yes.
And he was a bit of a wayward kid because there's always a couple of kids in a school.
Yeah.
So I remembered him real well. And
were you and Peter good at school? Good students?
I would say that I was very good mathematically.
Yep.
Failed every year till Form 5 in English.
Really?
And I decided that a girl was beating me and I had to beat her, and I ended up top of the class in high school in my fifth year, the first time I'd even passed English.
Right. You had a girl.
Purely to beat a girl.
Right. So to step back in time to the story, you've left Mornington under a cloud and went to New Zealand.
Yes.
Under slightly different names or?
I think in New Zealand. No, New Zealand because...
Went on a ship?
Yeah, we went on by ship, but you didn't need passports in those days, so you just went over there and started again. And they really wouldn't worry about chasing people either way. And there was actually, now that I know, huge trafficking of criminals both ways.
Yeah.
So you just went to the other place and to hide. And he did that, and he started working again and built up a quite a wealthy sort of business again. And then...
What happened?
Well, what actually happened was he got the lure of extra money, and one of the builders that he knew wanted to buy a new Holden.
Right.
And back in those days in New Zealand, you used to have overseas funds to buy a Holden, a third yep. overseas.
Yep.
Well, the old man was pretty quick with, I can get you that, give me some money.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of Wellington, New Zealand, and on the run again.
Because Dad embezzled the dough for the Holden.
Yes, he didn't buy the Holden.
He might have invested it on a horse, perhaps.
Well, I remember the horses back in those days too. And if anybody's old enough, there was a horse from New Zealand called Game.
Yeah.
And it was a very good horse.
And was he a punter, your dad?
He was by that stage. And I actually remember when that started.
Yeah.
I even remember the horse at Mornington.
Yeah.
He came home one afternoon and was full of himself and won £540.
Fair bit of money.
On a horse called Tipta.
I see. That's
so
a lot of
somebody
money.
Can check that out.
And he got on the punt. He was a bit careless with money. He'd make it and lose
well,
it.
Well, I think it's more like this.
Hmm.
If you got the philosophy that if you lose it, you just go and get it.
Yes. Okay. And this is what happened, to make a long story short. In New Zealand, when your dad lost it, he started to go out and take shortcuts. Is that right?
I would say that it's always in the back of his mind from childhood.
Yep.
It's basically the philosophy of our philosophy that we adopted was there's no rules.
Yep.
You just go and get what you want.
Why was your father like that? Now, was his father before him like that?
He was a bit of a shyster in business, but not against the law.
Right.
A lot of people were in the old days.
Yep. This is your grandfather?
Yeah, yeah.
Whose name was?
Keith Llewellyn Morgan.
So it's actually
Morgan Brooker.
Morgan Brooker, so it's a sort of a Welsh name? And your grandfather, the man with the long name you just said, he was a pretty big deal builder in the northern suburbs of Melbourne.
He had...
Developer?
Yes, he had timber yards and all sorts of things, and his father... I believe was a Northcote councillor, and the rumour that I used to always hear was he built half the Northcote.
I see.
But so I don't know his Christian name.
You came from a long line of builders, developers, land, operators. But your dad had run off the rails, as we found out, as you found out later, before you kids were born. Your dad, Kay Morgan, as a probably very young man, 21 or 22.
19.
He'd robbed a bank at Eltham, or attempted to rob a bank at Eltham.
I was going to correct you there.
Yes.
Yes, he was a failed bank robber.
He produced a weapon which he'd obtained from another crime, I think, weeks earlier.
He had broken into the bank at Greensboro.
Yep.
Burgled the bank, was looking to find the keys to open the safe, found a gun instead and a couple of dollars.
Yep.
So he took that and I suppose once you get a gun, you become a bank robber.
So he thought he'd then steal a Singer sports car.
Yes.
And he had his little Browning pistol that he burgled and attempted to rob the bank at Eltham. Shots were fired both ways and he fled in the Singer with shots after him and pranged the car on the way out of town, but escaped on foot. Is that right?
That's true. And there's a lot of similarities. He escaped on foot and went along the railway line, which we had done ourselves.
Later on, yeah.
Later on, we did the same thing without knowing his MO.
I see.
And also, there's the other similarity that I keep trying to remind people of.
Yeah.
My brother and my father both had stolen guns that they then carried with them on a future bank job.
I see. And was that a wise thing to do?
You're asking me to criticise my father and my brother?
No, not sure.
Well,
not
I sure. would say most criminals shouldn't
if you're
carry
out there,
things that you steal.
We aim to educate on our show here, Life and Crime. So if you're intending to rob anything, don't use the same weapons. No, we advocate not robbing anybody, actually. Now, you grow up, you and your twin. You worked briefly in banks, both of you, as tellers in the city here.
Well, I was. Peter wasn't quite that good.
He wasn't quite that smart?
No.
Oh, you were a teller?
I was a teller.
Oh, because you'd passed English in fifth form. And Peter was...
No, it was the maths.
It was the maths. Peter also joined a different bank.
He joined ANZ, but he stayed just as a junior.
Right. And then... for whatever reason, both of you ended up back on the tools or got on the tools with your dad.
Building. What happened was he got into trouble again. So The father got into trouble again.
Yep.
Working for a real estate agent and keeping the deposits.
Oh, I see.
So that then he had to leave Melbourne again. My banking
career,
legal career was over.
Right.
So we went with him to Adelaide.
And why did you leave? Why did you say we'll go with you instead of staying at the bank?
I would say for myself, loyalty and more adventure.
And your father must have been a charismatic person to sort of have that sway over teenage boys.
I don't think he had it so much over my brother. I think I was on the building sites. I was second in charge, sort of thing. I was the one that was sort of. There's always, you know, a pecking order, either your ability or your attitude.
Right.
And
you were a bit of a builder?
Well, I think I was just more into the teamwork.
Right, okay. So even though you're identical twins, there's differences.
Yes.
Yep. So you go to Adelaide, you've thrown in your jobs in the banks. Dad's over there. He's in his 40s by this stage. And he gets ill.
Yeah, he has a massive heart attack and... he'd had one maybe 3 years earlier on. We were working at Eltham High School.
Yep.
He went to hospital in the afternoon, came home and never did a thing about it.
Right.
So 3 years later, the second one killed him.
It killed him. So there you are, you and Peter, you're by this stage, what age?
Just turned 18.
Just turned 18. Your father's dead and you are, I'm not sure if you were qualified carpenters, but you were certainly good carpenters. Had you actually done apprenticeship?
No, nothing at all. So basically a lot of my guys that I've trained over the years remind me that I'm not really a carpenter.
I see, okay. And you continued in the building trades, the two of you?
We continued for another, from 18 through to, say, another 5 years and worked very hard and had a very good reputation.
Your mother had remarried a man with quite a lot of children?
That's right. Got six stepbrothers and sisters.
And one of you twins married one of the stepsisters or something?
It wasn't me.
No, it was the other fella, Peter. And you also got... So both of you married young.
Yes.
You know, when you're 19, 20 years old, that sort of thing.
I think I was trying to rebuild it, my own family.
Right, okay. You married young and had children, yes. Both of you.
Yes.
And you're building away, you've got your tools, there's plenty of building going on, you're making pretty fair money. But again, let's say there was a bit of a squeeze.
Well, in the late 60s. A little bit, but Peter's a bit, he always seemed to want to jump shops from builders, and he had got us onto a new builder.
I see. Where's this? Back in Victoria.
This was in Victoria, and a company, I better not mention their name.
Doesn't matter.
I actually Googled them a while back and I actually rang the bloke from nearly 40 years later. He says, oh, that's not me.
Oh. Anyway,
so Peter had us with a new builder.
Right.
And he owed us for two house frames and no money was coming forth. And it was about, say, Wednesday leading up to Easter.
Why did he not pay you?
A lot of companies in those days were working basically on overdrafts, so they'd be waiting for the owner to pay them.
Okay.
So you just have to wait.
Yeah, okay.
That was making Peter a bit itchy.
Right.
So he said to me, I'm going to have to pull this job because I'm short of money for Easter. I'm not going to enjoy Easter without a lot of cash.
And had he been – this is strikes me as interesting, that out of the blue at the age of 25 or something, that he would want to do that – does this suggest that out of sight somewhere he or both of you had been getting up to no good?
What when you say about, you don't just decide on a Wednesday to become bank robbers. It's in his
unusual.
It's in his head, I'd say, for quite a long time.
In his head?
Yes.
So it's been just festering away.
Yes. There was sitting at Smoko's, looking at newspapers and the boiler, the blue, I think it was the blue boiler suit gang in those days.
Okay, yeah.
They were making the newspapers two times and three times and four times a month.
Big arm robberies in those days.
And the gangs were doing it, and he'd say to me, oh, we could do that, we could do that. And I'd always just dismiss it because I'm not a natural arm robber.
No.
Some people have got a mindset where they can carry a gun. I don't have that mindset.
Right. And Peter sort of had the yen and he was out of money. You were owed money and he said, right, let's go and do a job. What happened next?
Well, he suggested it to me and the first thing is where we're going to do it. And we knew a TAB at Mernda because we'd lived at Doreen.
Right.
And then he said, we'll get a car. And he said to me, we've got to steal this car from a car yard.
Right.
And I go,
Fast car.
Well, we've got to get a fast car, similar to my father wanting a sports car for his first robbery.
Of course.
So there's a few similarities. Mm. And he said, oh, we've got to do this. And I said, well, I'm not really a car thief. I won't be doing that either. I had a list of things I wouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
So he ended up doing most of the first job. And he basically took a GT for a test run from a car yard.
Falcon GT.
From
worth about $6,500 at the time.
About $4,500 at the time.
Okay. Which is plenty of money.
It was.
In what,
1977.
77, yeah.
A nice red GT manual.
Yes.
And so he takes that away and I meet him to fuel him up because you don't want to be taking a stolen car to the service station.
No.
Because it's the first time we'd actually stolen a car, so we were being very conservative of what we did with it.
Of course.
And keeping it away from people looking.
Yes.
So he'd driven it up to the back of Doreen Arthur's Creek at the cemetery up there.
Yep.
I met him there with a couple of jerry cans. We fueled it.
Yep.
Basically, I said goodbye, and he waited till the darkness came in, but what actually happened was it was one of those really wet Thursday night it would have been.
Yeah.
And you could hardly see in front of yourself.
Yeah.
So nobody would have ever spotted the GT sitting out the front. And he went down to the Mernda TAB and bowled in there with a big rifle, looked like a machine gun.
And that was a new rifle you blokes had bought.
Well, not you blokes. We'll keep this straight.
No, him.
He had bought. It was his gun.
Kmart or something.
Yeah. Somewhere like that.
Yeah.
15-shot
semi-automatic.
Something like that, yeah. It looked very impressive if you're trying to scare people.
Mm.
The agent told him he wasn't going to open the door into the back, which my brother conceded.
Mm.
He handed him $320 or something.
Yep.
So then he got back into his $4,500 GT and drove off.
Did he? And the agent, what, was there more money at the back?
There would have been.
So fairly gentlemanly robbery, in a sense.
Well,
obviously, didn't terrify the bloke.
No, his first job was rather meek and mild by the sound of it.
I'll give you $300, but I won't take you out the back and get more.
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, fair enough. So he takes off on the GT. Might have pranked it, wet day, so pranked it somewhere.
Yep, and he met me, and I was sitting at a corner, and he threw the money into my car, which I pulled the steering wheel apart on the old Leyland P76, similar to the Valiants. You could take the steering wheel off and stick it down the steering column.
It's a wonder it didn't break down, that P76.
It wasn't the getaway car.
No.
Anyway, so then he leaves and he ditches the GT up the back of Doreen in a creek and had to walk all the way to Greensboro.
Ditched in a creek?
Yep. Going a little bit too fast,
a
little bit too adrenaline running, probably.
Oh, I see. Then he walks to Greensboro and hops on a train.
And I meet him at Greensboro because that was the pickup point. And he informed me he got $320, and I think he slung me $100 or something. And I told him I didn't think he was much of an armed robber, and maybe I better come along on the next one and show him how it would be done.
Oh, is that right? So that's go down well.
That's how I got involved.
He's not going to love this when you say this stuff.
No, he knows. That's the truth.
Yeah, well, possibly so. Although he had a long conversation with me the other day about his view on armed robberies and twins and all that sort of thing.
I have no doubt our opinions are very different.
Diametrically opposed. And we'll be back after this.
A troubled young woman. Her evil parents.
We never had any issues between us.
Has justice been done?
I'm in a prison.
Join journalist Richard Gilliatt as he delves into one of Australia's most gripping cases. Shadow of Doubt, a new podcast investigation from The Australian.
I cannot find one of these allegations that's possible.
Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
That's the sort of first After Dark bandit robbery, right?
Yep.
Number one of 24, I think. Ooh, something like that.
Something like that.
24 or 5. Of which Peter says he did 20-odd, he says. Him going into the bank, I think.
You know, there's something that amazes me.
What's that?
When you're a crook, wanting to tell everybody, including the police, that you're the ringleader and the biggest performer.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought that would be the smart thing to do.
It's a fair call, and I've known a lot of crooks who would never say anything. They wouldn't confess to anything much. One old bloke who'd killed about 15 people, he told me that when he was a boy at school, he might have pinched a few pigeons at the showgrounds from the wild one and sold them to the Chinese restaurant. But apart from that, he'd hardly admit anything.
Well, obviously Peter hadn't learned to our father's training.
No.
And because his training was that you do your best to beat everything possible, which he did in New Zealand. He'd done about 30 post offices and then he got pinched for one.
Your dad was the post office bandit over there. He used to break into them.
He'd break into at night time, and he was getting newspaper coverage the same as we did in Victoria.
And he'd get the safe and wheel it away. Wheel them out on a trolley or similar, wheelbarrow.
Yep.
Take them to a safe house.
Yep.
Chisel them open with a cold chisel. Take the money out and stamps out of the bank.
And money and stamps, that's right.
And you could sell the stamps.
You could return them to the post office if you're game.
Amazing that he would be game to take them back to sell them to the post office.
Maybe, I can't remember, maybe he sent me along.
I wonder. It would seem to be a good way to get caught, but anyway.
No, I don't know.
So, here you are. It's 1977 or 8 or something.
77, then. Let's call it the winter of 77.
Right. And having done one and only got $300 between you, basically, time to do another one. Within how long?
It would have been reasonably quickly, I would have thought. But that 4 days after Easter, the check turned up for the two house frames.
Oh, I see.
So really, if you had have waited a week.
What sort of money was that?
Well,
in the thousands?
Oh, yeah. Even in those days, it was in the thousands. So it was equivalent to probably
two or three months'
wages for one person.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't to be sneezed at.
It was for both of you?
Yeah, that would have been one check for two separate checks for the two different houses.
Okay.
But we worked together, so we'd just split that.
Righto. So the urgency wasn't there for more money for a little while, but he had the taste.
Yes.
Your brother.
I'd say so. And on that, because he had real guns, and I decided that I didn't want to carry a gun. So I went into the city to the old army surplus stores.
Yeah.
And I paid $59 for an imitation pistol.
Did you?
That didn't even have a hole in the end of it, so you couldn't point it at anybody.
Right.
Because they'd say there was no hole in it.
Right.
Or no bore.
Gotcha.
And so I was paying more for replica pistols than he was paying for real guns.
And did he not have the little 25 caliber that was your father's original, no?
No, he picked up the 25 caliber from the first bank.
Oh, from the first bank?
Yeah, so he didn't have it at that stage.
Okay.
Yeah, so that came much later.
That came later, so he had that rifle.
Yeah.
The new rifle he bought for nice.
If you look back, I suppose we learned our trade, perfected it on TABs.
Right.
And then said, well, banks would be much better.
Right. So can you remember what the second job was?
It was Berwick.
Berwick.
And I was more involved with the planning on that because I was now saying, I'll show you how to do it.
Right.
So we knew where the Berwick one was, and we'd worked out that there was a laneway next to it downhill.
Yep.
So instead of using a vehicle, we could.
Can anybody guess what he's going to say next? Downhill, use a bike.
That's right. And a bike doesn't make noise at night time where footsteps do.
That is so smart.
So rolling down the laneway all the way down to the road that goes to Cranbourne from Berwick, onto the railway line. All the way back to Dandenong on the railway line.
You mean from sleeper to sleeper?
Was a bit boobity bump, if that's the way you want to go, or biggity clack.
On the bikes.
On the bikes.
That's amazing.
But we missed the good bit, bit.
What?
Well, the cop station was only 100 yards up the road from the TAB.
Right.
So I thought, best we go up there and put a screwdriver through his tyres.
Before the job.
So even if he starts driving, he'll have to pull over.
Oh, I see. So you did a couple of tyres with a sharpened screwdriver.
Well, it would stop him pursuing us.
That's very true. So you got to Dandenong from Berwick along the railway line.
Yep. And about Narre Warren, the cops had a roadblock on the highway and all their lights and sirens and everything else blaring. And I won't say I was cocky enough to wave to them from the railway line,
no.
But I certainly was smiling as they were pulling up cars and we were just quietly riding along the railway line. And the only thing that went wrong is we had to get off the railway line a couple of times.
Train.
Yes.
Yes, that light.
But you can see them coming.
That light, yes, if they're coming towards you. When you get to Dandenong, you just, quite, what did you do, ditch the bikes?
We had a vehicle there, yeah.
Had a vehicle there? Yeah. Took the bikes home?
Yes, I would say so, but maybe, look, my memory is bad. Yeah. I think what we would have done is thrown them on the side of the railway line and went back for them a few days later.
Oh, I see.
Because we just want to get out of the area.
Now, we won't go through each and every robbery, but there's some sort of standouts. And one of them, I think, is a TAB down at Edith Vale or similar, down on the bay. Is that right?
This actually, see, we all have different memories of things.
Yes, yes.
And you guys are going to go for, and the public's going to go for, a canoe.
Right.
I go for the things I wouldn't do again, like I wouldn't do this on the first robbery and I wouldn't do this on the first.
Right.
So we look at this one and it actually comes from listening to the rumours about the Great Bookie robbery.
I see.
There was rumours that they got a speedboat across the bay. That was one of the rumours back then.
That was a rumour back
then. So we always thought, one day we're going to do a bank and get into a speedboat.
Right.
Well, to be honest, a TAB wasn't financial enough.
To do a speedboat.
To do a speedboat
yes.
episode.
Right.
So it was a canoe. And to keep the outlays cheap, built the canoe ourselves.
Did you?
Out of bought plywood and stuff and built it. And then it came down to the real planning, and he said, well, who's going to do it? And I said, there's no way in hell that I'm paddling out into the dark, 100, 200 metres into the darkness of the bay, so I won't be doing this one. So he did it. And rumour has it that he's come back into Patterson Creek.
Yep.
And within a couple of days.
So he's done the job. He's paddled out into the bay.
Yep.
And then as he's paddling along, he can see police cars and sirens and all the rest.
Yep, you'd see him on the Nepean
Highway. He goes along a couple of Ks at least.
Yep.
And then into Patterson River or Patterson Creek, down the river, pulls up, gets out of the canoe with the bag of money and possibly a gun, and you're there to meet him.
Exactly. We leave the canoe there, which we're going to pick up in a few days.
And it got stolen.
Somebody ripped off
the
canoe.
Some dirty dog stole your homemade canoe.
Exactly.
Out there somewhere is that homemade canoe.
It could be. I reckon it'd be a pot plant holder now.
Do you? What made of? Was it very stable? Must have been all right.
It didn't really matter. I wasn't going to be in it.
No, well, mattered
to Peter. Did actually decide that it was going to leak a little bit and that you had to carry a drink esky put guns and money in.
Really?
Well, you don't want to lose your guns and money out there 200 metres in the dark.
No. No, you wouldn't. So he could hold that and swim in.
Well, if something went wrong, make sure you bring the esky back.
Oh, I see. Well, good thinking. So that was one of the early jobs. Now, what are the ones that stand out?
Can I stop you there for a minute?
Yes, you can.
I'll have to pay my brother a compliment.
Yes, please do. I think you should.
I think I should too, because he did things that I wouldn't do.
Yep.
He robbed the first car because I didn't want to do it.
Yep.
He did the first job because I didn't want to walk in with a gun.
Yep.
And he even paddled down to Patterson Creek because I didn't want to do it.
Fair enough.
So he did things that I wouldn't do.
Yep, good.
So there was actually a difference that way.
Yep, yep. At this stage, where are you living?
I would say I was still living in Hallam at that stage.
Outer eastern suburbs of Melbourne, Hallam.
Yep.
And your brother, I think, was living soon after anyway, Nyora. South Gippsland.
That was right at the end.
Was it?
Yeah, he'd only been at that property for about... He'd swapped properties because we had so many horses.
We? That plural?
Both. Well, I wasn't into race horses like he was.
No.
I think he had four in work.
Yeah.
We were into buying and selling riding ponies.
Right.
And so he needed a bigger property to keep the horses.
Right.
Because it was our sideline or our cover.
Right.
So we'd go up to markets and buy
country
markets and buy horses.
Right.
Bring them back, ride them.
Yeah.
If they're any good, we'd sell them.
And this would explain a bit of cash money.
Well, this would explain our time as well.
We
can move around.
Well, isn't that an interesting thing, eh? All sorts of people are in the horse game, aren't they?
I think we were the straightest.
I wouldn't be surprised. And so you're doing a bit of horse dealing on the side, the pair of you. But he was pretty keen on it because his wife was horsey. Is that right?
I think they both got more involved.
As time went on.
You know, because they were living on the property where the horses were.
And Peter was keen on the punt and on the all that.
He enjoyed being a horse owner because that sort of you walk into the birdcage and do all the normal dignitary things. And
Mr. Morgan.
And one of his great things in life, I remember, was at the Pakenham races on the old Pakenham course when we were children in New Zealand or teenagers in New Zealand. We used to watch the Skelton brothers ride horses.
Yes.
And I'm pretty certain RJ was at Pakenham one day and my brother legged him up.
Bobby Skelton.
And then, after he came back, he called my brother Mr. Morgan.
How good's that, eh?
Now, we were only 12 or 11 when we knew the Skeltons.
Yes.
And they were sort of our heroes with so many of the other New Zealand jockeys.
Yep. Oh, that's a wonderful thing. So Peter was pretty keen on it, and easy come, easy go. He did tell me, I think, that he once, in a fit of possibly anger, dropped 10 grand at the races, which sold a hell of a lot of money in that era. That was two good yearly salaries gone. Like a lot of people only earned about 5,000 a year. You know, let's say a bank teller would be on it 5 grand a year, and he dropped 10.
Yeah.
Mainly because he was not happy about something or other. So you could see how easy come, easy go applies, doesn't it?
Well, if you're on the merry-go-round, it's just a matter of – he had a book of – I would say, without being ridiculous, most of the country towns in Victoria had been cased.
Mm-hmm.
We – basically with his reconnaissance, we knew how many police cars, how many banks – we knew everything about every small Victorian town. So
from where to where?
Oh.
Did you get any idea?
Well,
how far east? Did you get to Orbost? Or?
Well, we'd considered Orbost on horseback at one stage.
Did you?
No, Omeo, I think it was.
To get away on horses?
Yeah, so it was a pipe dream. I don't think that was going to happen.
No.
Basically, you could more or less say as far as, well, we went as far as Hayfield and Maffra.
Yeah.
And the other way, on the other side, Geelong, as far as Colac, etc., not many north. So it was more the southern parts of Victoria. And I probably did the closest job, definitely the closest bank to Melbourne, at Warburton, which is quite a distance from Melbourne. But it's that was all the other banks were, I think he only did Merbury North, which is a fair way away.
Yeah.
And Heathcote three times.
Notably,
that's a fair walk.
Notably Heathcote, yeah. And, of course, what was the biggest score was you at Warburton, 39,000?
I'm just thinking how Peter still feels about that. He's not too pleased that the junior partner of the team
got the biggest
pulled off the biggest robbery.
Now, that was a bank at Warburton. I'm reliably informed you spent 24 minutes in the bank, which means you could have spoken War and Peace in that time.
Well,
a lot longer than the Gettysburg Address.
It could be a world record, perhaps. Maybe somebody should check that. But it's not like what people think. It was actually had to be like that because what happened was I had no room to lock them in, the staff.
Yeah.
And I don't tie people up like other people do.
Yeah.
So what I did, I suggested they go in the toilets and that I would check on them in 5 minutes.
Yep.
And then in 5 minutes I checked on them. I said, well, you won't know when I'm leaving because I'm going to check on you a few times.
Yeah.
Now, being a bank teller, I'd observed that the alarms hadn't gone off.
Yeah.
The front big wooden doors were closed. Nobody could come in. It's after closing time.
It was pretty safe.
So I had the bank. It was my bank.
Yeah.
I was watching the street for any movement.
Yep.
The phone rang once.
Mm.
If an alarm goes off in banks, they'll ring the bank for confirmation that somebody should answer.
Yep.
So I let that one phone, I wasn't going to answer the phone call in case it was security.
Right.
But so what I did, the first time I went back in 5 minutes, checked them. Then I went back in 7 minutes and checked them.
What was the advantage of doing it rather than going?
Well, it means that they wouldn't come out for maybe 5 to 10 minutes from the toilets.
It would give you a start.
Which means I can get down to the bike and leave the area.
So what did you have stashed away? A push bike or a motorbike?
No, that was I wouldn't have been able to carry all that money on a push bike.
No.
That was a bike that I'd stolen.
Right.
And,
a trail bike.
It was a small 250 Honda.
Right.
Which I'd stolen, and I stole it from the Nana Goon bike shop, which was really an old garage.
Yep.
And I learned to ride that night after stealing it.
No.
So I'd never ridden a bike up to that stage.
Good Lord. Did you have a helmet?
I fell off a few times that night learning to ride to get it back to Roval.
Did you?
From Nana Goon. But,
you rode it. You stole it and rode it back.
I rode it all the way back to up all the back roads behind Beaconsfield and that. Even running off the road a few times and coming amiss, but I got it back to Roval, and I thought if I can go that far, I can do a bank.
And so at Warburton, you had this bike stashed where?
Down by the creek behind the bank.
And you went and got on it?
Yeah, jumped on it, and even that was a bit of an adventure because only being a novice to riding bikes, I'd forgotten I'd turned the kill switch off.
Oh.
So when I jumped on it, it didn't start.
Oh.
So, but I'm pretty calm in these situations.
Yeah.
So I looked around, nobody's sort of looking at me. And then I went to go back to basics, start checking everything on the bike.
Yeah.
Till I found the kill switch.
Right.
And just turned it on and fired her up.
And why you went? And how far did you go?
Well, I was lucky to make it out of the car park, actually. I took a TA, they used to call them a TAA bag, an Airways bag.
Yep.
It was too much money. So I asked them for a bigger bag, which they were kindly
lent to
me.
They lent you one.
But I couldn't throw it over the shoulder. I had to have it around my wrists.
I see.
And when I came out of the car park,
the
weight on my wrist made me gun the bike up.
Ah.
So I basically did a wheelie across the main road of Warburton, nearly ran into the side of a bus.
Oh.
And I'm pretty certain at the time the newspaper article by one of you fine gentlemen said that I couldn't ride.
Well, that was fairly right.
Well, it was only my second or third ride.
That's fair enough. So you dumped the bike up the bush.
The advantage of a small bike is rather than leaving a trail where you ride, it'd been raining all that morning, so the dirt roads were leaving trails.
Yes.
So I spent about 3 hours doubling across all my trails, so there'd be 50 different directions I could have went.
Oh.
But I didn't go on any of those. And I'd seen crossing off that I could get the bike off the road without leaving marks.
Yeah.
So I picked the bike up and threw it over a wire fence.
Yeah.
And then hit it so that the cops wouldn't even, you'd have to search the whole of Melbourne to find the bike.
I find that most ingenious. Simple but good. And so you were up the bush in the rain with $39,000, which is, as we pointed out earlier, several years' wages in those days, quite a lot of money. You could buy a pretty fair house for $40,000.
Well, I Googled what...
A pretty good house.
I could buy two houses in Dandenong North at that time.
You could, yep.
And I Googled them last week.
Mm.
And they're worth about $799,000 each now.
So, even allowing for other things, it was a serious score.
It was not bad.
And we'll be back after this to finish our story.
Access a world of true crime podcasts on Crimex Plus, where award-winning journalists take a deep dive into unsolved cases.
Every week, we're waking up to a dead woman, a dead mother, sister, auntie, grandmother. It's not good enough.
From the team that brought you The Teacher's Pet, Shadow of Doubt, and Dying Rose, unlock early, ad-free, and bonus content from brand new series and flagship shows such as I Catch Killers with Gary Jubelin.
One was shot in the mouth, and I thought he was dead. Another one had been shot with the shotgun, and I got the overspray.
Search for Crimex Plus on Apple Podcasts to start digging deep into the world of true crime.
With the 39,000
at Warburton.
At Warburton, it changed my line of thinking with the bank robberies. I now had enough money, go into state, restart, do whatever I wanted to do. I thought if I continued, it was about ego. and I was looking at my brother, watching what he was doing and how his ego had totally run amok.
Yep.
And I wasn't going there.
Doug, we'll pull up there for now. I know there's a lot more coming in your story. We'll stop there and we'll bring you back to tell us more about your other exploits, but also your road to redemption.
Well, that's the important part, and I'd love to, because I'm hoping other people see they can follow me.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks for listening. Life and Crimes is a Sunday Herald Sun production for True Crime Australia. Our producer is Jonty Burton. For my columns, features and more, go to heraldsun.com.au/Andrew Rule, one word. For advertising inquiries, go to newspodcasts@news.com.au. That is all one word, newspodcasts. And if you want further information about this episode, links are in the description.